I'm Susan Montanaro, and you're listening to Dreams and Detours, a show about the life we plan to have versus the one we're living, for better or not. Everybody has a story, and I believe we find ourselves in each other's stories.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
I'm well. And you?
I'm doing well, thank you. It's good to be here with you. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you.
Thank you. Welcome you, Mike, to the show today. It's nice to be here with you and get into a conversation about you.
It's good to be here. Thanks for inviting us.
Yeah, absolutely. I am really excited to talk about your new podcast, which I know you launched just a few months ago. And from what I can hear so far, it sounds like you have some pretty cool and interesting guests that you've been able to sit down and chat with. And I know for me, like doing this show, it's really allowed me to meet great, interesting people with really cool stories. Hence, I'm get the chance to talk to you today. But I want to dive right into your show, Unstoppable Mindset, where inclusion, diversity, and the unexpected meet. So tell me a little bit about the show, but really, like, why? What was the drive? What was the, you know, desire for you to say, hey, you know, I've got a successful career. I've done a lot of really cool things in my life. Now it's a podcast. I want to launch one.
Well, there are some other things behind it as well. At the beginning of last year, I was invited to join a company called Accessibe, A-C-C-E-S-S-I-B-E. And Accessibe is a company based in Israel that helps make internet websites more accessible. It created a product back in 2018 that uses an artificial intelligent bot to analyze websites that want to subscribe and that subscribe to Accessibe. And it then provides the appropriate codes in a little bit of a different way than people are normally used to, but it provides the codes that make the websites more accessible. The bot's not perfect, but the bot does a lot and really adds a lot of value to websites. And since Accessibe has added some other things to enhance it going beyond the bot. But when I joined, I was asked to help messaging, help with dealing with a variety of aspects of the products because I have a career in sales and sales management and dealing with companies that goes back to the 1970s. So one of the things that we thought about doing was a podcast. And the idea behind the podcast was not so much to just talk about Accessibe, but rather to deal with people and address the issues of disabilities. Because in the United States, and in fact around the world, between 20 and 25% of all people have a disability. In the case of websites, if website owners and operators don't make their websites accessible, they're excluding as many as 25% of all people. What a huge amount of business to leave behind. And people don't do that out of meanness. They do it out of a lack of education and the feeling that, well, it takes more work to do that. Well, with Accessibe, it's a lot less work than it otherwise would be. But anyway, we decided that along the line, we wanted to do a podcast to not only introduce people to others with disabilities, but just also to have a podcast where we could bring people in had inspiring stories to tell and who could help inspire in one way or other others to not think exactly the way that they'd always thought, but rather to think maybe there's more that I can do or there's more to life than what I think is. At the same time, I'm also working on creating a new book. We wrote a book back in 2011 called Thunder Dog, The Story of a Blind Man, His Guide Dog, and the Triumph of Trust, which is a my story of not only being in the World Trade Center, but growing up as a blind person. And since 2001, I have been a keynote speaker traveling the world. But I've never really taught people how to deal with fear. When I experienced September 11th, I grew that day without having a lot of fear. The fear was there, but I had learned to control it. And it took a while to realize that what I had done is prepared in a way that established a mindset that said, you can deal with this. And I've never taught people to do that. So we're starting a new book. Our working title right now is A Guide Dog's Guide to Being Brave, because I've used a number of guide dogs. And so the dog element is kind of cool because it's a team effort between a blind person and a guide dog to deal with whatever situation comes along, including something like what happened to World Trade Center.
Right. So let me interrupt you there for one quick second, because I think that that's, you know, your story and clearly will, you know, enhance and inform the listeners about, you know, what that is, your story of surviving 9/11. But I think that that's so cool, because if you really think about it, yes, you have been blind and had no sight since birth. And so you've learned along the way different things that the average person is not considering. And so on that day, that sense of bravery or that sense of survival, I'm certain, obviously, you know this, it was so much different in your experience than it might have been for someone else. And then fast forward, you're able to now cultivate a different kind of message and really asking people to take their blinders off, essentially, and to sort of pivot and look at the world differently and look at the population differently, everything from accessibility and not leaving people out and taking into consideration, you know, through the form of education, of course, but also through the form of like, no one wants to live their life being selfish. We want to sort of point out that the world is going on more than just in anyone's bubble, right, of life. And so I think that's brilliant that what I think I'm getting at is the theme runs through every aspect and through all the work that you do, whether it's surviving a situation in a very traumatic experience like 9/11, or just in your everyday work that you are performing, this thread is there of be braver or be fearless in a way that people don't consider. Because those words and those expressions get thrown around quite a bit.
Sure.
But what you're suggesting is just, I think, bigger, bolder, and way beyond what people normally might consider. Do you know?
The problem is that in the blindness, people think that if you lose your eyesight, the world is over.
Right.
You can't do anything. In fact, doctors told my parents when I was born and it was discovered that I was blind that I ought to be sent to a home because I could never go up to anything and I would take away all the love that they could possibly have for my older brother.
Unbelievable.
And it's even worse in foreign countries where when children are born with disabilities, it used to be that they were just summarily euthanized. But we won't go there. But the bottom line is that people think that eyesight's the only game in town.
Right.
And it's not. The reality is that what happened to me on September 11th was the culmination of a lot of preparation, growing up with a philosophy and a belief that I could accomplish whatever I chose to. But also, because I happened to be blind, I also made a choice that not even all blind people would make. And that is that what I chose to do was to spend a considerable amount of time when I went to begin working in the World Trade Center, to learn the complex, to learn the procedures and processes, to meet the safety officials, the fire and the Port Authority leadership, who gave me a lot of information to help me understand what would happen in an emergency. And the reason for doing that was that I led an office. I was hired to open and run an office in the World Trade Center. So in order to do that, I had to have all the information that anyone else would have. The difference is I'm not going to just sit there and read signs on walls if there's an emergency. And in fact, nobody should sit there and read signs on walls.
Absolutely.
If there's an emergency.
You can't they wait should to take a visual cue, you know?
They know what to do. Right, yeah. Right. And so I spent the time learning that, and I actually got to the point where when I went into the complex every day, I'd think to myself, anything else I need to learn today? And I would do a little bit of investigating and just kept the mindset act. And that kicked in on September 11th. And that preparation is what I'm hoping we can get across in A Guide Dog's Guide to Being Brave, but also to what we're doing in Unstoppable Mindset. The reality is that all of us have a story to tell. Mm-hmm. All of us can be unstoppable if we choose to, and all of us can survive a lot more than we think we can. Now, on September 11th, yeah, the building could have just tipped over and it wouldn't have mattered. There's not going to be a whole lot of way to deal with that.
Sure.
When you're in it, when I was in it, but it didn't do that. And so I was given the opportunity, if you will, to evacuate, working with my guide, Roselle. And of course, everybody says, oh, the dog just led you down the stairs. Guide dogs don't lead, they guide. And the difference is that I'm the active person in control, giving the dog commands as to where I want the dog to go. The dog's job is to make sure that we travel safely. And that all means that if I give the dog a command and the dog doesn't feel it could carry it out, like we get to a street corner and we start crossing the street, and suddenly a hybrid car comes around the corner that I don't see, the dog is going to move back and I'm going to follow the dog. Because I also know that there are times that the dog needs to take control of the team,
right,
which is always something that should be the case. Every member of a team has talent, and leaders of teams ought to recognize when people should be able to their talents, or in this case, a dog. But it's a team effort. I am in control of the team. So the other thing that happened on September 11th is that as we were going down the stairs, I constantly encouraged my guide dog, Roselle, to make sure that she felt confident and understood that I felt confident, because if I started feeling worried, our relationship was such that she would start concerned about me rather than being able to do her job. It all plays in to what happened and what should happen in any kind of full situation. Most of the time when we as people are confronted by some unexpected life-changing event, and we can talk about some that we all face, like the pandemic, but when we're confronted with that, we become blinded by fear, as I put it. And that really means we lose our ability, or we give up our ability to make intelligent decisions, and we don't practice allowing ourselves to use the fear that's there to motivate us, but also take control and observe what's going on around and make a good decision and know that we can come out of it.
You lose the opportunity to have any clarity or to, like you said, use fear as a tool even. Like, okay, what can I know about this situation? It doesn't have to be joyful and happy. It could be scaring the heck out of me right now, or I'm so uncertain, but how do I even use that information to navigate safely or to make strong and wise decisions to the best that I possibly can in this moment? And I agree with you. I think people are so used to, I think control is such an interesting dynamic because people really feel like they are in control of themselves. And I don't know, I kind of think sometimes surrendering a little bit to life and kind of playing it somewhere neutral in the middle can often be very helpful in terms of not oversteering life, right? And kind of like flowing with the wave, if you will, instead of fighting it. And and so how do we do that? And I think very often we hear, and I'm sure like we're about to dive into the work that you do helping people manage crisis is, you know, how do we get ourselves out of that situation? And why do people who normally would feel in control all of a sudden feel that they have none whatsoever? And those are, of course, the blinding fears that you now work with others to overcome, or at least talk to others to overcome. And I think it's just fascinating.
Well, the issue is that we think we have a lot of control, and we also worry about a lot of things over which we don't have control.
Exactly.
And we separate the two. So one of the things that we really should do is focus more on what we can control and don't worry about the things that we can't. Look at what's going on with the pandemic today. The reality is, whether people like it or not, there is a pandemic. I know people who still deny that there's really a pandemic. Oh, it's a government thing. They're inflating the numbers. It really isn't as bad as people make it out to be. There aren't all these dead bodies. And
it's hit every corner of society. I find it so, it's almost unbelievable that anyone can still say that, you know?
Oh, there are a lot of people who still say that.
Yeah.
And, but the reality is they don't have any control over it. Mm-hmm. And a number of them don't take the vaccine. Mm-hmm. And that's their choice. To a degree, it's their choice. But the issue is that what they do is they just keep going on thinking they have control over everything rather than stepping back and go to themselves, what's really going on here? Mm-hmm. Well, there's a pandemic. There is a disease that we're all facing. How do we deal with it? And that also gets into the whole issue of pandemic fatigue and people being frustrated because they have to be locked down and they can't go out. That all means they can't do things the way they used to. Well, guess what? After September 11th and people started saying, we got to get back to normal, the reality is normal would never be the same again. And we're in that situation again. Normal will not be the same again. There's been a change. And it is something that we all are very capable of addressing. And it is also true that we can learn and we can teach children to accept the way things are right now and grow in that environment. For me, the pandemic was a great opportunity to find Accessibee and a new working opportunity to develop a podcast, to work on writing a book, even though all the speeches that I had been traveling and giving all over the world had dropped after the pandemic started and nobody could go anywhere. But my wife and I are both very comfortable being at home. We recognize that's where we are right now. It'd be great to be out on a cruise or something like that. But we made the conscious decision, no matter how many cruise ships are out cruising and all that, there's just way too much danger to go out and be in a world where so much disease and so many people who won't deal with the disease appropriately. And now, of course, we have the Omicron variant of the COVID pandemic, which also means that even if you are fully vaccinated and have all three shots like we do, you still can get the disease. And
oh, that, Mike, it's a wildfire here in New York. I got to tell you, every other person I know has contracted it. And we have now officially been, you know, we're back at home working from home for my profession. And so, yeah, it's like a wildfire, that particular variant. So I hear you on that. And the those crazy that I know, like you, have had their three rounds of vaccination. And so while certainly it's reducing the devastation, severity of the illness and the flu-like symptoms they may be experiencing, it certainly is not, causing anyone to just be immune to it at this point entirely. So there's some good side, of course, to that, and we love that, but it's definitely impacting everyone once again. And so I'm glad that you've done that. You've decided not to go out into the world, which can be very dangerous when people are not on board. But I'll tell you something. I agree with you. This time has been very interesting in terms of creative development, in terms of those who are willing to grab a hold of what it means to have a sudden shift in life. And how do we take advantage, and where are the silver linings? How do we recreate who we are and how we utilize ourselves in this now newer space of, yes, being a little more home confined or taking it down a notch? So many people I know who you see it out every night are either learning to cook or they're figuring out how to assemble food kits, but they're doing something different, right? And then you have, you and I were in the middle of our podcast world and, you know, launching stories and trying to share more information with others out there for a host of reasons, because the storytelling is wide and far. And so that's brilliant. And then, of course, you know, to recreate ourselves as individuals, whether it's in our coaching work or in our writing work, to utilize different tools and different means of getting the word out there. I think it's been an interesting time of creativity, if nothing else. And I think you're right. We do have to teach our young people how to respond in the here and now and how to be present. You know, prior to COVID hitting, you know, meditation, yoga, all these like alternative, but really very natural ways of breathing or being were already very popular and really taking a hold, thankfully, in many communities. But I think the bigger message is, well, you were all about being present. That was apparently your practice. And so let's make sure that you're not only present as an individual, but teaching the young people about being present and utilizing what we have now instead of the constant complaint of, oh, I want to be back where I used to be and looking behind. It's like, there's so much gift in today. I just hate to see people not see the gift in what is, you know, and I'm sure you're feeling similarly. So.
Sure. And the fact of the matter is that when COVID was not with us, we were on this merry-go-round, just kind of doing what we do, never analyze what we do. Most people don't do much in the way of introspection. Do you stop at the end of the day and do you look at the things that you accomplished or didn't accomplish, tasks that you performed? Did I do it the best way that I could? How could I have done that better? Oh, this happened today. What did I learn from it so that that won't happen? And we never take that time. We never work on getting a good night's sleep. People say, oh, I'm too busy. You know, the reality is you can't afford not to take the time to introspect, to sleep, to recoup for the next day. We would be so much better if we did more of those things. I've been meditating since the 1970s. I don't always do as much of it as I should, but I do it. And I think it's very important to do, to keep one's sense of perspective. And so many people don't do any of that stuff. They just think they can go forward. And as I said earlier, they worry about all the things over which they don't have control, and they try to take control over things, and it drives them crazy.
Exactly. And there's a whole big, you know, lesson to be learned there. Eventually, I feel like those things blow up in people's faces in terms of, you know, the circumstance of their life falls apart, whether it's a relationship, a job, a task, a goal, whatever it is. And, you know, it's a hard lesson, again, even if you're willing to be conscious when things are cracking and shattering, can you identify and sit back and look at where, you know, you might have to let go, and it isn't always up to you. And so I think that's brilliant.
I think that the really successful people who truly grow and move forward in life do take the time to look at what they're doing.
Yes.
And I don't necessarily mean someone who's incredibly rich is successful, but I think that the people who accomplish and who also very well get a lot of money because they are in an environment where they do that, but that get recognized for the collective good work that they do, I think there's a lot more to those people than most of us want to imagine or take advantage of and learn in our own lives. And it would be so great if more people would take the time to look at what they do daily. And we're going to talk about that in A Guide Dog's Guide to Being Brave. We'll talk definitely about looking at what you do at the end of the day and so on.
It's all about
controlling fear.
Don't you think it's about being adaptable in the moment? And again, it's like riding that wave and not fighting a current and knowing that you need to be, you know, sort of one with it and see where you can extract all of the beauty and all of the good parts, for sure. And I love that. So tell me more about your next project and about the book.
Well, so we're going to look in the book, we're going to look here. We're going to look at how people react to fear, and our goal is to help give people some thoughts about how they can better use the fears that are a natural part of their lives. Fear is a natural thing. It's a physiological thing and it's a psychological thing, but it's going to be there. It's natural. It's not an issue of whether you're afraid or not, no matter who you are. It matters more about what you do with that fear and how you use that in your life. If you let it take over and completely control you, then you won't move forward and there's nothing that you're going to be able to accomplish. And that's a problem.
So I do love the idea of being able to guide and help people utilize fear, because like you said, everyone has fear. It is a natural part of life in a variety of circumstances and for a variety of reasons. And yes, each person might have a different, you know, things trigger them differently, of course. But like you mentioned, it can either overtake your life and literally paralyze you, because it is a physiological experience, and keep you cemented in place, unable to emotionally or physically make decisions or move yourself and propel forward. Or you can be somewhere in the middle or the lower part of the middle where I say you walk forward, you're numb, your body is having a tremendous experience and deep, you know, negative impact, but you are thumbing through life and trying to navigate the waters despite it, maybe not making the greatest decisions because emotionally the clarity isn't quite there. There's still some numbing sensation, but and I think a lot of people do this. They're trying to pull it off. They're trying to let others see inside of them or see that they're having that experience out of shame, out of what embarrassment or whatever it is, or just out of, you know, the fear itself. And then you have others who really stop and for all it's worth, their attitude is like, I need to inspect this, as painful or as uncomfortable as it might be. You know, what's the lesson or what can I use here? Or how do I navigate forward? What parts do I take? What parts need more of my attention versus not? And how do I keep carrying forward on what I was intending to do? You know, how much of that forward walk or thinking needs to be modified or not, you know, and I think it's an interesting dynamic, but yeah, gosh, I think people really could use some assistance and support there.
It is also like developing any other muscle, right?
That's right.
The more you do, the easier it becomes. And what you described to some people would say, well, I don't have in a fearful situation, I don't have the time to do that analysis. Yeah, you do. The more practice you have in facing unexpected things that come along or preparing to face unexpected things that come along, the easier it is to make very quick decisions. And I'll give you an example. So on September 11th, the first thing that happened to us is that we heard a muffled explosion. The building kind of shook, and then literally the building tipped. Like I'm actually tipping my arm toward the screen right now. The building tipped about 20 feet because tall buildings like that are actually big springs. They're made to flex in the wind.
Exactly.
All right. So the building tipped and it came back. I went back in the office and I met my guide dog, Roselle, coming out from under my desk where she had been sleeping. And I had gone to the doorway and just stood in the doorway. Really big deal and really big help. If the building tipped over standing in the doorway, it's not going to make a big difference, but you know, that's habit. So I met Rel coming out and a little bit later, a colleague who was in the office started yelling, my God, Mike, there's fire and smoke above us. There are millions of pieces of burning paper falling outside the window. We got to get out of here right now. And I said, slow down, David. We'll get out. And he said, no, we got to get here right now. There's fire and smoke above us. He was completely blinded by that. Mm-hmm. And he wasn't observing what was going on around him. What I had instantly determined, literally instantly, was Roselle's not afraid. And I've read a lot of stories about people whose animals saved them from fire and other things because the animals detected something before the humans did. And they got their humans to pay attention. They got them out of burning buildings, so on, or houses or whatever, before the fire got to them. Well, Roselle wasn't giving indication of fear. And I knew what it was like when she was afraid because she's a very fearful dog, was a very fearful dog when it came to thunderstorms and so on. Mm-hmm. It wasn't giving any of those indications. So I knew that whatever was going on wasn't such an imminent threat to us that we couldn't try to evacuate in an orderly way. It was an instant decision. And I finally was able to get David to focus. And then, of course, we got stairs. But it's part of the process of learning and understanding how to really deal with what goes on around you in those kinds of situations. And it's a process that you have to learn. And so we want to cover that in the book. And we call it A Guide Dog's Guide to Being Brave because I've had throughout my entire life a lot of experience dealing with guide dogs. Mm-hmm. Now 57 years working with guide dogs, 57 and a half years. And so I know the value they bring to my life. It isn't guiding, it's the relationship, it's the companionship, it's the friendship, it's the bond that's created that has enriched my life. And that's going to be a part we talk about in the book, whether you have a bond with another person, whether you have a bond with an animal. And the reality is there's a lot of value in having true bonds and relationships with dogs and so on, and even cats, but with dogs,
right?
We have a cat too. But you know, the relationship is extremely important, and it adds a whole new dimension and value to what goes on in your life.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think, you know, look, at the end of the day, whether someone has a guide dog or not, the lessons that you are looking to instill and share are valuable and meaningful. And like I had said earlier, you know, for people to take their blinders off and to stop and realize that there is so much value in being able to still have a hectic moment, a fearful moment, but be able to guide yourself or work with your service animal or with the person next to you, to be able to make firm, decent decisions that can either be life-saving or just literally critical to your mission and whatever that might entail. And I think those are really important lessons, because
everyone has life
or behaving badly is not the best result for that.
Everyone has life experience that can help other people. And
absolutely,
the thing to do is to take advantage of, in a good way, the experiences that others around you have when you're in a situation that's full.
So would you say unstoppable mindset is an opportunity also for you to have those stories shared? I mean, are you seeking out
people
who obviously could have that kind of storytelling going on?
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's fantastic. How are you enjoying the process?
It's a lot of fun. We're having a lot of fun with it. Our 15th episode goes up tomorrow.
Fantastic.
And so we're having a lot of fun with it, and we're going to kind of continue to do it. We do have people who have disabilities who have great stories to tell. We have other people who don't have disabilities who have great stories to tell. Sure. They all relate. And it's important to be able to share that information, and hopefully people will listen to what we talk about and grow from it. And they may know other people who would be good guests and would love to hear from them. And we will do our best to help make this a better world.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I was just thinking, you know, it takes every type of person, you know, to bring what they do to the mix, right? It's an integration, and it creates the inclusion that we're all hopefully seeking. I mean, you know, you and I certainly are. That is so essential. And I'll tell you, I was thumbing around at Accessibee, looking at the site, checking out what the offering was. And I'll be honest, I was not aware of the technology. I mean, not that I was not unaware that technology existed. I was unaware of Accessibee until you and I had spoken not long ago. And immediately, because of the social work, psychotherapy work that I do in my regular life, I thought, wow, you know, I've worked with different groups who have disabilities in social work. And I immediately thought of people that I want to make sure have the full knowledge that this exists, you know, and that there are tools out there, which I'm sure they do. I'm not going to be waving some grand banner, you know, as if I'm introducing it, but I just felt like, you know, there is a whole population that I want to make sure have access and are utilizing this sort of technology.
And if you have, and I assume you have a website, so it might be a good place to put up Accessibee and use it yourself to make your website more accessible.
Exactly. I did think that too. I'm like, oh, I think it's my responsibility to make sure
that have,
yes, yeah, of course, that I have technology embedded so that people can access and have as good of an experience as they're entitled to have, really, like the rest of us, like everyone, like you said, the 20-25% of the population that does not have that. It isn't right. It is not cool. And we need an education process, of course. We need to wake people up so that everyone is creating platforms for everyone. I agree.
One of the things that Accessibee has started to create, it's in its infancy still, it's in beta, but it's coming, is something called Access Find. If you go to Google or to any of the web search engines and you look for something, you find it and you go to the website and you do what you got to do. But for those of us who have a variety of different kinds of disabilities, when you go to do a search and you find something, there's absolutely no guarantee that it's accessible. In fact, the odds are better than 98% that it's not accessible, because the gap grows wider. Less than 2% of websites are really taking advantage of putting accessibility coding and functions and features in their sites. So AccessFind is going to be a search engine that will specifically feature sites that are accessible. They may or may not use Accessibility. That's okay. The issue is, are they usable and accessible? And there are audit tools that exist that people can run for free to see how accessible their websites are. For example, you went to Accessibility's webpage. Accessibility has a tool called ACE, which is on that site. If you go to Accessibility and you go to ACE, you can plug in your website and you can see exactly how accessible it really is.
Okay.
And again, Accessibility will greatly enhance how usable your site is with its access widget, which is what we now call the artificial intelligent bot. But again, the things that it doesn't do, Accessibility can also help fix through other coding methods and so on.
Bottom line, in other words, you can go onto Google and Google might be utilizing a tool like Accessibility, but that doesn't mean that they're going to return the search sites that actually are considered acceptable or usable for you.
Well, a site like Google doesn't use Accessibility. They, in theory, have their own programmers and coders, so they code accessibility in right from the outset.
Okay.
And Google on a website does okay, but they also have Google Docs, Google Sheets, and other things, and they try to have their own flavor of accessibility. And by that, I mean, for example, if you are blind, you can't use the same keystrokes that you might use in a Microsoft Word document.
Got it.
To move around that you would use in a Google Doc, which is unfortunate that Google did that. There's nothing in the Google world that will allow you to have a profile that says, I only want to know about accessible websites.
Right.
So AccessFind will do that. So if you put Accessibility on your site or use some other method to make your website accessible, then you could also be on access, and it's a free site. There's no charge for doing that.
Very cool. I'm going to look into it. That sounds fantastic. Of course, I want my site to be accessible to everyone. That's, you know, again, thank you for the education. And I almost want to say, I apologize for not thinking bigger and broader. So I appreciate it.
But again, as I said earlier, people don't include or leave out access because of any kind of malicious sort of thing.
Right.
They don't know. People don't know. I mean, the reality is it's good business to just create full accessibility and inclusion on the website.
Absolutely.
And there's another aspect of it, which is relevant to say, and that is that we who need to use accessible websites recognize that it's a jewel when we find one.
Right.
And so we also tend to be very brand loyal to websites and companies that truly provide inclusion. So if you have a website that's accessible and people are looking for whatever service that you have, if they find you because your site is accessible and you are truly inclusive, you probably have found a friend for life.
Well, as a former media executive, I will tell you, between brand the brand loyalty aspect and word of mouth advertising from a traditional person, there is nothing more valuable. So I echo exactly what you said. And I agree that that is huge for anyone who's looking to continue to draw in everyone who wants to tap into their services or their products. So it's brilliant. It's brilliant. It was really good having you here today, Mike. And I look forward to chatting with you more. I feel like there's more to come from both of us on our shows. And I look forward to being able to have another conversation with you, especially as you get the book moving and as you get closer to publication. I want to make sure we have you back and we highlight the availability of your next piece of work. So thank you.
Well, I really appreciate you having us on. We definitely want to keep you posted. And now we need to turn this around in the very near future and have you on Unstoppable Mindset. I'm sure you have a story to tell.
I always have stories to tell, and I have. There I'll you tell are. You something. My daily ritual includes my rundown of the I am, and one of them is I am unstoppable. So it is. It's in my daily practice. So I look forward to being a part of your show soon enough. Thank cool. you.
Well, thank you for having us.
That's it for this episode of Dreams and Detours. If you like the show, please rate, review, and subscribe and share it with your friends. You can find me at dreamsdetours.com and at dreamsdetours on Instagram. Thanks for listening.